Acme Lithium, a company positioned near the epicenter of lithium production in the United States. Since 1966, Nevada's Clayton Valley has been the primary production source for lithium in all of North America. Acme Lithium holds two promising lithium projects in the Clayton Valley region. Acme Lithium, U.S. trading symbol ACLHF, and in Canada, ACME. Web address, acmelithium.com. That's acmelithium.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, Venezuela. Professor, in these last days, there have been unusual reports about Venezuela and the Biden administration. If I understand it, the Biden administration is seeking additional oil to flow because of the shortfall estimated with the contest in Eastern Europe. However, it puzzled a lot of commentators that after a years of sanctioning the Maduro regime, regarded as illegitimate by many, including, I believe, the U.S. most recently, and the Venezuela refugees flowing out of that country seeking remittances or shelter or anything to maintain an economy that's collapsed, that the U.S. would send counselors to Caracas to talk about oil with Maduro. Now, I don't want to explore the politics of this. I want to ask, is there actually something that Maduro could do if he wanted to? Because I've understood over the years that the infrastructure for oil in Venezuela is badly disrepaired, been let drift with many of the people who knew how to work the oil field either driven out or just leaving in despair. So is there additional oil to be pumped from Venezuela, even if the miracle happens and Maduro sees the light?
John, this has many of us scratching our heads, including any time that you can get Senator Rubio and Senator Menendez to actually agree on something, you know that something big is happening, and that both actually were pretty outspoken against what happened. But in the short term, it really doesn't appear that Maduro either has the capability or probably the sincere desire to help the United States out. Now, the good news is, of course, that those initial negotiations secured the release of two people, Gustavo Cardenas, one of the Citgo Six, who's been languishing unjustly in Venezuelan prisons in 2017, as well as Jorge Fernandez, who was basically picked up in association with owning a drone that was suspected to be part of intended attack against Maduro. But that was the good news, at least the positive thing that came out of this. But in terms of the oil, as you pointed out, there is some possibility if sanctions were released that some excess oil could come in. There's one estimate that, for example, if Chevron, which is likely to be the beneficiary, a U.S. company, begin trading in Venezuelan oil. But Chevron could perhaps over the next couple months increase Venezuelan production, which is right now about 800,000 barrels a day, up to 1.2 million barrels a day. But that would take time and it'd be speculative. And keep in mind that actually the U.S. was previously importing about 672,000 barrels per day of Russian oil. But even what Chevron could bring online, so if all of that went to the United States, I mean, that would still be a relatively incomplete contribution given what's happening with oil markets globally. But as you point out, the refinery structure is in great difficulties. Most of the pumps are down. One of the reasons why Venezuela is producing any oil at all is that despite sanctions, it is actually importing Iranian higher crude, which it uses to actually process and to dilute the very heavy crude that it has, so it can at least get it out of the refineries and sell it. So in some ways, the United States is not only giving Venezuela more resources, which will help them potentially buy some of those Russian arms they've talked about wanting to buy, but indirectly actually helps the Iranians in this as well as breathing new life to the Maduro regime. The other issue is we've had time and time again that Maduro has promised to do certain things in terms of what he would do in last year's elections, and really hasn't complied until he only has used that to get some sort of immediate relief. And so it's really dubious as to what Maduro will be willing to do in terms of real political benefits so we can see a lifting of sanctions, and then the benefits would be very ephemeral or not coming. And along the way, one of the big casualties of this has been another foot in the grave for Juan Guaido, the de jure president of Venezuela, who wasn't even consulted when the U.S. began these with Jimmy Story and Juan Gonzalez and the others in the delegation.
A statement from the legitimate government, that's the headline, statement of the legitimate government of Venezuela on the visit of the delegation in the U.S. includes ironies and observations about how Russia is working in the Latin America. I read from the statement, in Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, and Belarus, the force of the state has been hijacked and is put at the service of the common enemy. This is Guaido's faction speaking. Today, the free world has a historic responsibility to fight against global authoritarianism so that democracy prevails. We will do whatever is necessary to achieve it from the government in charge and the National Assembly. We count on the firm commitment of the United States to achieve this. The lives of millions of people depend on this. It occurs to me, Evan, in reading this statement and thinking about what we're observing, the intention of Moscow in the Ukraine attack was to reproduce the Venezuela model, to impose a government that is a dictatorship sympathetic to Moscow, Maduro, and not to worry about the collapse of the economy or the relations with the larger world. In fact, to encourage a refugee flow that destabilizes the neighborhood. The refugees in Colombia, the refugees flowing north through Panama to the U.S., that would be something that you could say Ukraine looks like when and if the government, the legitimate government, is driven out of Kiev. The Russians didn't need a military invasion in Venezuela. Maduro took care of that by himself. But this combination of authoritarianism grabbing the gems of the country, in this case, the resources of Venezuela, is what we can imagine would happen to Ukraine should it fall under the boot of the invader.
Absolutely, John. I mean, this is just full of ironies. And one point on Juan Guaido. I mean, this is a person who has, heroically, who's courageously fought with really almost no options and resources, putting his own life and liberty at risk against Sabin and other, the FAES and other kind of nefarious instruments of Maduro's, state. For the Biden administration, which claims to be about democracy and about, disadvantaged groups and things like that, not to even consult, the person who is heroically and technically represented by the U.S. as the de jure, president of Venezuela, and not to even bother to consult him before these negotiations was just incredible. But as you also pointed out, this sends exactly the wrong message to Putin. And you pointed out the irony, because the bet of Putin is that, force at the end justifies everything. In other words, Putin is calculating that he can invade Ukraine in cold blood. He can, use cluster bombs and level cities and kill tens of thousands of Ukrainian, civilians, if not more. Because in the end of the day, if Putin is on control on the ground, the Biden administration and others will complain about it loudly for a while, eventually they will come to deal with them. And the fact that, we have long been in this fight to get the criminal an undemocratic and repressive government of Venezuela, the de facto government of Maduro, out of power, and that the Biden administration is turning around and now saying, okay, all those bad things that you've done will be forgotten over oil. And so this sends exactly the wrong message to Putin, that if he just wins on the ground, holds out until he can level Ukraine and push all the refugees out and killer in prison Vladimir Zelensky, if Putin can just win, that eventually the United States will be forced to forget his bad behaviors and deal with him, just as they're doing right now with Maduro. So for me, it was incredible that the administration would send this message.
There are complications. I want to touch upon Colombia, Petro, his candidacy, which is a strong contender to become the president of Colombia. Petro, as far as I understand, doesn't have one version of ideology, but he has spoken often against fossil fuels. almost as if he plans to end their extraction from Colombia, which is odd given that Venezuela is distributing its fossil fuels to its partners in the region. I believe at one time Cuba was a beneficiary. Maybe it still is. But Venezuela is plundering its natural resources. Colombia, to my knowledge, is not plundering. Petro and Maduro don't seem a match, Evan. They don't seem in sympathy with each other. They seem different kinds of strong-minded leftists. Is that a fair generalization, that Petro has other ambitions and will not sit happily next to Maduro should Petro become president?
Well, this has long been one of the dilemmas of the Latin American left, especially the populist authoritarian left, John, that you have various different conflicts, many of the values. And indeed, when you look back at the days in which Iran's Islamic regime, the days of Rouhani or even Ahmadinejad before him, in the name of Islam, was embracing a secular criminal state, is like, okay, how is this going to work out? So in exactly the same way, you have the kind of the principled leftism and environmentalism of somebody like Petro. You have the criminality, but in the end, I think it's bound up more by a common enmity towards global capitalism and the United States and other things of that, trying to paper over those differences. But as you also pointed out, what's happening in Venezuela, not only in terms of plundering the petroleum resources with the regular environmental disasters, the leakages of refineries and the spillage of oil from Venezuelan tankers that have happened over the past couple months, in addition to the travesty that's happening across the Venezuelan mining arc with the leaching of mercury, with massive contamination and the destroying of what was some of the most incredible pristine and protected territory in Venezuela, such as the Canaima National Park. And again, those things continue in other places, but perhaps in its most dramatic expression in Venezuela. And so, and the other irony is that with respect to Petro, Petro is not only talking about shutting down Colombia's oil economy, but also Colombia's carbon economy, because Colombia is a major coal exporter. And so, if you take away what is essentially, Colombia's major export products, then you create an economic crisis, which forces Colombia into even greater radicalism and poverty and deprivation, which leads you to even more Venezuela-type activities. Now, some would say that's exactly what some of the radicals backing Petro want. But certainly the irony is that if you take away economic growth, you end up environmentally with a much worse situation than that if you allow certain things which are dirty but fundamental to people's livelihood.
There's a new president in Chile. Chile is a vital contributor to the natural resources of the planet Earth. We go to Chile next and President Boric. Evan Ellis is the Latin American research professor for the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. That's the one that talks to the Pentagon. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.